Welcome to MaxQ, an interview podcast from Peabody's Launchpad office. This is a special release outside of our normal interviews with recent Peabody alumni. To engage with the current dramatic changes in our world, Launchpad director Dr. Zane Forshee is interviewing distinguished professionals in our field about the impact of COVID-19 on students and the performing arts. This episode, Zane speaks with Amanda Cook, the editor-in-chief of I Care If You Listen.
So, Amanda, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I wanted to just touch base with you. So, as you've probably in full pandemic mode, how have you been spending your time the past few weeks?
I have actually been working from home for about 2 months now at this point. So I feel very, very fortunate that I still have a full-time salaried job that I can do from home. Depending on how long this continues, who knows if that will continue to be a sure thing. But for now, I feel more fortunate than most in that I can keep working. So it's been an adjustment to working from home, and I work for a Suzuki music school, so we have had to shift all of our classes online and just trying to negotiate how to get 20 children to all log into Zoom at the same time for a class and how to communicate all of that to parents and just figuring all of that out. But I mean, what's been really amazing is seeing how resilient all of our young students have been with the technology. They're just so savvy and they feel very at home with it. So that's been a really surprising thing to come out of all of this. But other than that, I'm also doing my work with I Care If You Listen, and we have been trying to figure out how to shift our priorities to create opportunities and resources for people. And it's always been important for us to create a platform that's a safe space for people to share, but that's been increasingly important now as we all kind of navigate this uncharted territory together.
Yeah, I'm curious then, because you have two different worlds. You have the very much in-person world of what you do with the school, and then you have the very much virtual world of in a sense of like, I Care If You Listen. And how has it been watching both worlds kind of connect into a virtual format for you?
Yeah, it's interesting because so much of my day job is in-person interaction, but we've seen that just, I think across the board, what people need right now is a sense of community, a sense of connection, and some sort of feeling of continuity, just something that they can grab onto that feels familiar. So for our students at the Suzuki School, that's been just seeing their teachers each week. And even from the perspective of the teachers, just seeing their students, just seeing their faces once a week is really helpful. And then in terms of I Care If You Listen, we have always been an online-only community, so we're used to operating in that way, even just down to the day-to-day operations of me working with my contributor team. But I think people are needing to rely on technology so much more than we have in the past, that we're seeing more and more people wanting content, wanting resources, wanting ways to connect with each other. So just across the board, trying to find ways to provide that for people.
Let's dig into that a little bit. How do you see the landscape of opportunities for artists shifting in all of this, especially in what the music and kind of the world that I Care If You Listen focuses on? What's gone away? What's new? What are you starting to see?
The main thing is there's so much uncertainty right now. We just have no idea how long closures are going to last. We're seeing things starting to try to reopen, but I think that they will very quickly get shut back down again. And we still have no idea how long restrictions on large gatherings are going to last. I mean, I'm maybe a little bit more pessimistic than the average person, but I think that things like live concerts are going to be one of the last things to come back. And if they do come back, if when, then how is it going to be permanently changed by everything that's going on? So with traditional performing opportunities gone right now, I mean, people's schedules have just been wiped totally clean. And so that traditional performance setting doesn't exist anymore. So what's new is people are having to adapt to these online spaces. And I was having a conversation with someone on Twitter who was saying that Zoom is just a new venue that we need to learn. It's just a new room we need to acquaint ourselves with. But I love that idea that artists will always find a way to adapt. Artists will always find a way to be creative. And now we just have to figure out how to do what we do through technology. So even though these traditional performance venues and opportunities aren't really an option right now, we see people who are making content with these video conferencing platforms in mind. And that might change how you conceive of ensemble performance. It's not really possible to do things that require strict synchronicity, but looking at things that are a little bit more experimental, that are a little bit more communal in how they're generated. I mean, I think it'll be really interesting to see how people respond to using this platform creatively.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I just got off of a meeting recently with the composer Joel Puckett and then the composer Oscar Bettison, and they were both talking about these ideas of playing with the technology and using some of the challenges around it to be the inspiration for new creative ideas. And speaking of new ideas with this technology and that kind of coming back to your odd ideas you mentioned around Twitter, you put up a really interesting tweet, I think a few days ago, talking about, from the standpoint of I Care If You Listen, of reviewing online performances. Can you talk a little bit about what you found from doing that, what the response has been?
It was so interesting. I was expecting people to be a little more hesitant. I was expecting it to be a little bit more of a nuanced conversation, but it was just an across the board, really enthusiastic, yes, please continue to review what we're doing and talk about the art that we're putting out. And I guess the uncertainty or the confusion on my end was with how a lot of this was messaged, because when everyone went into lockdown, people just started throwing out all of this online content. And it was unclear as to if this was just something to do to keep us all entertained and preoccupied, or if this was a real shift in the way that we're starting to create. And so, I mean, all of the large institutions are now releasing archival videos and doing live streams of things. And you see people who are coming together and doing these stitched together Zoom tribute concerts and everything. So it was just unclear to me what the goal of putting all this content out was. So I wanted to reach out to performers and composers too and see, you know, is this still reflective of your practice? Is this something that you still want us to consider in a critical way? And the answer was basically a yes, but, with the but being, you know, we all have to shift our expectations. We all have to shift our areas of focus, and we have to shift from the perspective of a writer the way that we are talking about what's happening. I think it becomes much more storytelling than true criticism, where we're considering the process of creation a little bit more. We're considering the relationships between people a little bit more. So it's a work in progress right now, but one of my writers and I streamed the same concert this past weekend, and then we sort of did a preliminary phone call. We watched the concert together, and then we exchanged some debrief emails, and we're working on kind of creating a framework for coaching people to review live streams and how that's different from the type of concert reviews or other criticism that we're used to.
You know, it's really interesting to see how this is going to evolve. I'm curious what your thoughts are. You talked about this idea of storytelling around this. Do you think there's an opportunity for artists to create more of a narrative around what they're doing in to work up to a performance? Or are you thinking about just the entire process as a whole? I'm just curious.
Well, it's interesting because some of these live streams are basically performances that you would expect to see live adapted for streaming. So nothing is really different about the process except for the fact that it's live streamed instead of in a typical performance venue. But then there are other projects that are coming out that are specifically intended for the circumstances that we're in right now and created with this technology in mind. So I think it just kind of depends on the project. Some of these projects are also coming out of specific commissioning initiatives that organizations are putting out as a way to try to financially support artists right now, because financial support for artists, especially freelance artists, is sorely needed right now. So I think it becomes more just about the circumstances surrounding the performance and whether that's artists being more open and transparent and communicative about their process, maybe that's an element of it, or maybe it's just in the way that we talk about it after it has happened and just kind of considering the whole project instead of the end result. I don't know. I mean, it could go a lot of different ways, and I think we're all just trying to navigate this together.
If you were to be able to go and knowing what you're seeing and kind of watching how all of music is evolving right now, and you were to go back to like being an undergraduate student, how would you approach positioning yourself during this time? Like, what are some of the possible opportunities that you're seeing and what would you focus on?
If I had all of the knowledge that I had right now and I could cram that into like my undergraduate age self, I mean, I think my undergraduate age self would be a little overwhelmed and terrifying by the amount of information that my current self was trying to pack in. But I mean, I think having a strong online presence is so important right now. So the first thing that I would do is just take this time to build out a functioning website. That is so crucial. And I mean, not that many people realize just how essential that is, I think. Have something, at least just basic framework of your bio, a couple of photos of yourself and some examples of your work, whether that be in some sort of streamable, embeddable format, just audio or video, doesn't really matter. Just have something up there. And having a functioning website is a really great starting point. But one of the questions that I've been asking myself is, you know, how everything is so saturated. So how do you cut through the noise? You know, and how do you create something that is meaningful? And I think that's where these new opportunities are going to come in. And I think that's where we're going to see people starting to get really creative and try to figure out how to use these video conferencing platforms.
Can you dig into, you know, you touched on just having an online presence. Can you talk about why, from the standpoint of you being an editor, why that's so critical to have a functioning website? I mean, I understand why, but I'm thinking about why that student should.
Well, because if I'm doing some sort of review, or if I'm doing even a promotional piece like an interview about you and your work, I want to help promote you as much as I possibly can. So being able to link to your website where people can find out more about you, they can find examples of your work, they can get to know you as a more complete artist, then it's all because I'm trying to help you. Also with the photos, that's a really big thing. But there are a few things that frustrate me more than spending way too much time trying to find a usable photo of someone somewhere on the internet. And so most cell phones take really high quality photos now. So even if you have never done a professional photo session with a photographer or anything, just, you know, get out your iPhone, have someone take some photos of you, and just have some high res images of yourself on your website. and have them on your website in a way that they are able to be downloaded. One thing that's interesting is a lot of these website builders that have drag and drop modules have these really beautiful looking photo carousel options, but often it presents the images in a way where I can't then grab them from your site and download them. So it's even just down to little technical things like that. But yeah, I mean, it really all just comes from the point of I'm trying to help you, I'm trying to promote you, and I want to send as many people your way as possible. And just having access to all of those resources in one place is really helpful.
So I'm going to switch over to kind of just what we were talking about with what you're seeing with the future of online concerts. And what do you think artists can do, and what are you seeing artists successfully do to create new opportunities for themselves in this new, as you said, like this new online venue? This Zoom is the new venue. How are you seeing audiences or artists build audiences?
It's so hard to say, because I think it's almost too early to answer that question. I think everyone is just trying to figure it out together. I think the organizations that are in a position to provide resources and guidance and help are trying to get as much of that out there as they can. But until we really see how long we're going to be in this, it's sort of hard to say. I think we're all at the point where maybe we're accepting that we might be in this for a little longer than we had hoped for initially. And I think there has been a little bit of hesitation to really dive in and really figure out this whole online thing, because maybe there was a little bit of held out hope that this would pass quicker than I think it will. So yeah, I think it's a little too early to answer your question, because I think we're just now accepting the fact that we're really going to have to adapt for more than just a few months.
It's going to be curious then to see as this, I agree with you, as this realization sinks in, what the new art is going to be that starts to emerge from this. Do you think it's going to be, I'm just curious, like, and do you see it being more solo pieces? Do you see it being more collaborative pieces? What have you noticed so far?
Yeah, I mean, I'm also really curious to just see what happens, because artists will always find a way to be creative. Artists will always find a way to respond to the current moment and make something out of it. So I think we're going to see a much bigger reliance on technology. And I'm almost hoping that this might be the thing that pushes especially artists in the United States more toward experimental practice. I think generally US artists are a little farther behind European artists when it comes to the very avant-garde experimental. But I feel like this is almost a really great opportunity to explore that realm of artistic practice, because so much of that doesn't rely on being able to be exactly in sync with one another. It's a little bit more aleatoric. It's a little bit more, just responding to each other, and it's a little more approximate maybe. maybe that could be an interesting thing that comes out of all of this.
What has been hard for you to, as part of this fallout with this COVID-19 crisis, in terms of like your work with I Care If You Listen, what are you kind of seeing that, like, in terms of how it's impacting the work that you are all doing there?
What's really challenging is right now I Care If You Listen is still running on a 100% volunteer basis. So we've always been a volunteer publication. That's still the case right now. And people are out of work, or they're trying to adjust to working from home. So people are either finding themselves with a really daunting amount of time on their hands and no structure, or people are finding themselves completely inundated with trying to work full-time and be a full-time parent and full-time school teacher and all of that rolled into one. So I think people are just struggling right now, and it's hard for people to take on creative work. I a couple of weeks ago, we had a really amazing essay by the composer Mary Kyum Jin on I Care If You Listen. And she was talking about how, even though she's a composer, she's choosing not to create original art right now, because for her, this period of losing gigs and feeling so uncertain about the future, she compared it to the feeling of grief and feelings of depression, and how it's okay to allow yourself to be in that space and not feel pressure to still be creative. So it's tough because people are finding it hard to just sit down and get words down on the page and find meaningful things to say. I mean, I know I've experienced that too. I was commissioned to write an article for Naxos recently, and just getting myself to actually sit down and commit to writing it was really hard. So, I mean, I think that has been challenging. And then also with concerts wiped clean, that takes all of our planned concert review coverage off of the editorial calendar. And I'm even now looking at album reviews too. Albums are still coming out, but eventually we're going to run out of content in the can that can be released. So just trying to think about how we can shift and what types of content we're covering, what sorts of articles we're putting out, and the longer this goes on, how that's going to have to change.
Yeah, it could be this sort of, in a sense, of the traditional review process, I can imagine. We'll hit a point in terms of, like, as you said, like the stuff that's in the can, we're going to hit a drought.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm curious where that happens and what happens next. Do you feel, as you're watching all of this happen, that your team is starting to think about more and more new possibilities? I mean, we talked about the online concert reviews. Are there things you are all starting to imagine and explore as next steps with what you guys want to do with I Care If You Listen?
A little bit. One new thing that we've launched in the midst of all of this is a weekly artist curated playlist. So we're working on that in collaboration with American Composers Forum and Innova Recordings. And each week we commission an artist to curate a playlist of their own music, other people's music, things that inspire them. It doesn't have to be contemporary classical music. It's really kind of a sonic portrait or little snapshot, a little glimpse into what goes behind this particular artist's creative practice. And it's been a really great way to get to know people better through what they're listening to. So being an online only platform, we've been wanting to do more multimedia content. So it's been nice to be able to dip our toe in the water of that a little bit. And those are finally starting to catch on. So every Friday we drop a new playlist, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that continue to develop. We're in, I think, about week 5 of that right now. So we're really starting to hit our stride and kind of hone the focus and the presentation of it.
So have there been any surprises for you around that in terms of what people have put in the playlist? Did somebody upload something and you're going like, really, that's what you're listening to? So surprising.
I don't think anything has really surprised me too much, because I think contemporary classical music is such a mashup of genres anyway, and people are starting, not really starting, they have been for a while, but people pull from different genre influences all the time in new classical music. So I guess it doesn't really surprise me that people's interests are so varied. It's just nice to see what each individual person pulls.
Yeah, everybody, have you had anywhere you're kind of going, oh yeah, that makes total sense. Like, I see where they're starting to pull, like, because it's really kind of seeing, like, what are the, if like from a perspective of, if you think about cooking, like what are the spices that they kind of go to consistently?
Yeah, the last two that we published, I think, were really, really reflective of the artists who curated them. One was Angelica Negron, and hers was all about how she worded it so beautifully. I think she said it was about, you know, the different facets of the Latinx experience, and she is just such a colorful personality, and she's just this really genuine person. And even the little intro video that she recorded, like her background was like so colorful, and it just, it really, I think, captured her essence really, really well. And then the other one that we published recently was from Niloufar Nourbakhash. And hers was all about friendship and the relationships that she has with people. And she's the founder of the Iranian Female Composers Association. And so a lot of her work that she does is very collaborative. And so it made a lot of sense to me that her playlist would be just grounded in these very personal relationships.
That's really beautiful. Touching on, I kind of want to circle back to what you mentioned earlier with this motivation piece and your colleague, that you, the composer you mentioned earlier, who was not really feeling like composing, and then yourself with like sitting down to write and not really feeling like writing. You know, it's something I've, as I've been talking to more and more artists, that seems to be a through line. And are you seeing that with more of your colleagues? And if so, what are you starting to notice about that? I, from my own personal standpoint, I've watched quite a few just say, I'm not creating right now, or I'm not there yet.
It's hard for me to say so much because I have drifted a little bit away from my background as a performer. So I feel like I'm not so much immersed in that space anymore. But I think in general, it is just hard for people to be creative right now because our, the ways in which we interact with each other have just been so upended. And I think so much of what we as musicians do relies on sharing that moment in a physical space together. And when that physical closeness isn't a possibility anymore, then it just really makes you reconsider the work that we're doing and how we communicate that work and how we share that work with each other. So I think a lot of it comes from that physical distancing, not being able to all be present in a moment in a space together. And I mean, there have been so many articles that have come out recently about why Zoom meetings are so fatiguing. But you know, it's just not the same. And the novelty of it wears off pretty quickly when you're just constantly looking at people through a screen. And I think that's the main thing that we're trying to fight against right now.
What is or are some of the most inspiring things you've seen colleagues or artists create in the past few weeks, or that you've just seen in terms of like acts of kindness online? What have you kind of seen? Anything that really just kind of struck you as something kind of special?
That essay that we published by Mary Kim Jian was, I think, one of the highlights from the past couple of weeks for me, because working with her on that essay, she was just so vulnerable and so open and so honest. And but in doing that and in putting herself out there like that, it resonated with so many people. And we just got this overwhelming response of people saying, I just really needed to hear this right now. And seeing that ripple through the communities and online circles that I follow was really special. And I was just glad that Mary felt comfortable sharing on our platform, and that she, you know, views us as a space where she can be that open and honest. And also just for our readership and our community that we try to serve, to be able to offer that and just say, you know, it's okay to not just keep grinding right now. But also one thing that I've noticed is, I mean, a lot of artists right now are financially not in a great situation, but people are still trying to offer help to other people. So it might not be financial help, but I mean, people have just been trying to offer whatever services they have that could be helpful to other people. I've seen people putting online, you know, if you're building a website right now and you need someone to proofread your bio, or if you need someone to pick up groceries for you, or, you know, just little things. And people are just all really trying to help each other as much as they possibly can, which I think is amazing.
It's true. We're really... It is one of those things where you're really seeing people open themselves up in different ways to feel connected to one another.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us, and we hope to speak with you soon.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Theme music for the Max Hugh podcast composed by Vincent Fasano.